Hi, Dave Emery here, side two, for the record program number 823. Bank Caution, Banksters at Work, part two, subtitled, Still More Collateralized Death Obligations. This is being recorded on November 30th of the year 2014. Once again, this is a follow-up to For the Record shows 772 and 792. It also is broadly supplemental to the many broadcasts I have done about the financial meltdown of 2008 and the run-ups to that. By the way, that was something that I predicted in For the Record 412, done in early June of 2003. That program was called The Engineer Intends to Wreck the Train, and it mentioned that the GOP and the Bush administration had deliberately set course to produce a financial crisis in order to force the elimination of popular social programs such as Social Security and Medicare. Of course, a lot of money was made at the same time. In our last article, we've done just before the break, we were taking a look at some very fishy doings at Deutsche Bank. Apparently, Deutsche Bank and its U.S. branch in particular have been engaged in some very shady practices indeed. And an article that we looked at speculated that those shady practices directly impacted the deaths of William Brokesmith and also Calogero Charlie Gambino, two key Deutsche Bank executives. And recall that one of the elements that was cited in the article that we closed with was precious metal and commodities speculation. Note also that Deutsche Bank's notional derivatives notational derivatives are the equivalent of 20 times the gross domestic product of Germany. Now that, folks, is the operant definition of too big to fail. When you have that much red ink or potential red ink on the books, yes, too big to fail, because if you fail, everything else fails with you. We noted in the close of our last article that one of the areas that many investment banks have been getting into concerns their involvement with the commodities markets, and that in turn has produced a lot of alarm on the part of a number of observers, including people on the Senate Banking Subcommittee. That was reported in the Financial Times of November 20th of 2014. By the way, the same edition of the Financial Times as the article about the Swiss social psychology experiment that showed that bankers are more inclined than others to be dishonest. This is an article by Gina Chon, C-H-O-N. It's titled U.S. Blasts Banks Commodities Deals, and it reads in part as follows. Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, and Morgan Stanley expose themselves to catastrophic financial risks, environmental disasters, and potential market manipulation by investing in oil, metals, and power plant businesses, according to a Senate report. The findings of the two-year probe by the Senate Investigations Subcommittee said that the bank's involvement in the physical commodities put them in the same vulnerable position as BP, which has been hit with several lawsuits and billions of dollars in fines because of the 2010 Gulf of Mexico oil spill. Quote, imagine if BP had been a bank, unquote, said Senator John McCain, the senior Republican on the subcommittee, again quoting, the liability from the oil spill would have led to its failure, leading to another taxpayer bailout, unquote. A 2012 Federal Reserve review found four financial groups, including the three in the subcommittee report itself, had shortfalls of up to $15 billion to cover extreme loss scenarios, the report said. The Fed is considering restricting banks' physical commodity activities. That last sentence again. A 2012 Federal Reserve review found four financial groups, including the three in the subcommittee report, had shortfalls of up to $15 billion to cover extreme loss scenarios, the report said. The Fed is considering restricting banks' physical commodity activities. The report also says the bank's ownership or investments in physical commodity businesses gave them inside knowledge that allowed them to financially benefit through market manipulation or unfair trading advantages. And again, that is to be weighed, I think, against the interesting, although not altogether surprising, report after the University of Zurich in Switzerland that bankers are indeed more inclined than others to wax dishonest. One of the thoughts that occurs to me, and again, bear in mind in the Zero Hedge article that we read in Side 1, an observer said that speculation in precious metals should also be added to Deutsche Bank's potential trouble areas. One of the things that struck me as I was reading this, the price of oil has been plummeting precipitously, and one wonders to what extent some of these banks have potential exposure to oil markets that could ultimately either bring them down or cause them such distress as we would have to go in once again, we being the taxpayers once again, go in and bail them out. Bear in mind that, again, according to the article that we looked at the end of Side 1, the derivatives of Deutsche Bank alone are 20 times the gross domestic product of Germany. That is too big to fail, and one wonders with the precipitous drop in oil prices if that could potentially bring down one of these banks, requiring, once again, a bailout of a too-big-to-fail institution. One also wonders to what extent the bank's participation in commodities markets is perhaps causing some of the speculation in the price of petroleum. I do not know, but it certainly is interesting to contemplate as we contemplate the plunging price of oil, which is being celebrated by many. One wonders to what extent that could end up bringing down one of these gigantic banks that have been engaged in commodities speculation. On top of the death of Calogero, Charlie Gambino, another banker, this with Citigroup, has died under very strange circumstances. Citigroup as well has been getting fined and investigated, and they're right in the mix of the large investment banks that and other financial institutions that have been engaged in shady activities. And, of course, they have benefited from bailouts, courtesy of the U.S. taxpayers and others. A guy named Sean Miller, last name M-I-L-L-E-R, allegedly committed suicide. He was found with his throat cut, and this after having placed several 911 calls complaining of being stalked and also having been photographed on security cameras as arguing, apparently quite energetically, with an unidentified man. And this was ruled, you guessed it, a suicide. I want to make clear that I don't have any definitive information on the death of the late unfortunate Sean Miller, but I'm skeptical about the suicide finding. At least he didn't shoot himself 7 or 8 times in the head and torso with a nail gun, but I think there is reason to view the suicide verdict as, frankly, suspicious, or certainly viewing that verdict with a jaundiced eye. The following is from the New York Daily News, which played this in vintage New York Daily News style. If you're not familiar with the New York Daily News, first of all, there art thou happy. The New York Daily News is, I think the overall journalistic bent could be described as sensationalist and somewhat vulgar. They sort of are engaged in a race to the bottom as far as New York Dailies goes, with the Rupert Murdoch-owned New York Post, which used to actually many years ago used to be a very good newspaper. Now it is typical Murdoch press. If the New York Post were published on softer paper, it might be very, very much more useful than it is now. New York Daily News is the same sort of a newspaper. And again, they give this vintage New York Daily News spin. Again, bear in mind that Sean Miller died of having his throat cut. He was he placed a couple of 911 calls. He was seen on the security camera arguing with an unidentified man, then found with his throat cut. They ruled that suicide. This is by Tina Moore, Rocco Parascandola, and Bill Hutchinson of the New York Daily News of November 19th of 2014. Banker 42 slashed his own throat in Manhattan bathtub during drug and booze-filled bender. Sources, again, typical Daily News. Sex and drugs and death, I guess you could say. Article reads, the death of a Citigroup banker found with his throat slashed in his posh Manhattan pad was being investigated Wednesday as an apparent suicide, sources told the Daily News. Sean Miller's body was found Tuesday afternoon in the bathtub of his Greenwich Street apartment in Lower Manhattan with his throat slashed ear to ear. Cops initially suspected foul play, parenthetically, I can't imagine why, saying earlier that no weapon was found in the apartment and that Miller, 42, was caught on surveillance video arguing with a male companion in the building's elevator. When crime scene investigators moved Miller's body, however, they discovered a knife under him, leading them to believe he slashed his own throat and collapsed into the tub on top of the weapon, sources said. Detectives now suspect Miller killed himself after going on a booze and drug-filled bender since at least Monday with a stranger he hooked up through the classified advertising website Backpage.com, the sources said. Police found evidence of alcohol and drug use in the apartment, including what appeared to be crystal meth, sources said. The man who Miller was arguing with in the elevator apparently left the banker's apartment late Sunday or early Monday, sources said. Miller came down to the lobby and asked the doorman not to allow the man back into the building, according to sources. Detectives found no evidence that the man returned to the building, and there was no sign of a break-in or struggle in Miller's apartment. Sean Miller's body was found Tuesday afternoon in the bathtub of his Greenwich Street apartment in Lower Manhattan. Records show that at least two 911 calls were made from Miller's apartment since Monday. The caller, believed to be Miller himself, complained about someone outside his building stalking him, sources said. The body was found at 3:11 p.m. Tuesday after Miller's boyfriend called and pleaded with the building's doorman to check on Miller's welfare, sources said. Citigroup confirmed Miller's death in a statement. Miller was managing director of environmental and social risk management and had worked for the financial services firm since 2004. That is a very similar position to the one occupied at Deutsche Bank by the late William Brokesmith. I would also note that the also now late Calogero Gambino was involved in a related function. So I guess being someone involved with risk management at one of these too-big-to-fail institutions is a very risky proposition indeed. And again, I don't know what happened to Sean Miller, but in light of, you know, the argument he had with the guy in the elevator and placing 911 calls, slashing one's own throat ear to ear is a fairly grim way of taking one's own life. It would be difficult to imagine that Sean Miller could not have found an easier way to check out. For example, jumping off the top of the building might have been a little bit less painful. But again, I'm skeptical about the suicide verdict. But what is so interesting is that he also was involved with risk management at Citigroup, which is one of the many large institutions that has come under scrutiny in connection with questionable or outright overtly illegal activities. We're going to conclude our program by reading as much as we have time for about a very interesting and, to my way of thinking, and apparently to other people's way of thinking as well, a very ominous event that took place in mid-October of 2014. Now, in general, with a tepid global economy, Europe is in recession, Japan is in recession, China is experiencing some choppy economic waters, although the U.S. is doing relatively well. we are not invulnerable to the slings and arrows of global economic fortunes. Normally, in perilous economic times, U.S. Treasury bonds are seen as a very secure financial safe haven, arguably the financial safe haven of choice. Gold has been seen as a good hedge against inflation. Bear in mind that many investment banks have been dabbling in the commodities markets. Although the price of gold has soared, gold is a hedge against inflation, and deflation, not inflation, is the order of the day. One wonders if some of those banks could be vulnerable to a sudden drop in gold prices. It is not unusual for gold, the price of gold, to follow the price of oil. And with the price of oil declining enormously, it will be interesting to see if gold once again follows oil down, so to speak, and in turn what effect that may have on some of these big investment banks and other financial institutions. Now, with the growth in high-speed computer trading, it appears that the normally bedrock market in U.S. Treasury bills also might be subject to, some very buffeting financial headwinds in and of themselves. This entire article, if we don't have time to read the whole thing, is in the description for the record 823. I also want to make it very clear that I am not a financial professional and that much of this is somewhat opaque to me, and I have to wrestle with it as well to gain understanding. So if there are listeners who find this a little bit opaque, well, you have my sympathies. However, turmoil in the U.S. Treasury bond market threatens all of us, and I think that the possibilities here need to be very carefully considered. It was considered in the Financial Times of Tuesday, November 18th of 2014, an article by Tracy Alloway, A-L-L-O-W-A-Y, and Michael McKenzie, capital M-A-C, capital K-E-N-Z-I-E, Anatomy of a Market Meltdown. Skipping down. For decades, the U.S. Treasury market has been a bedrock of global finance. While stock markets are prone to sudden price swings, such episodes in the vast and easily transacted world of treasuries have been far rarer, giving the market an exceptional reputation for orderly trading. That reputation took a big hit last month. On October 15th, the yield on the benchmark 10-year U.S. government bond, which moves inversely to price, plunged 33 basis points to 1.86% before rising to settle at 2.13%. While that may not seem like much, analysts say the move was 7 standard deviations away from the intraday norm, meaning, check this out, it might be expected to occur once every 1.6 billion years. Okay? This is unusual, folks. Continuing. For several minutes, Wall Street stood still as traders watched their screens in disbelief. Electronic pricing machines, which now play a bigger role than ever in the trading of treasuries, were halted and orders canceled by nervous dealers as prices seesawed. The events have sparked a financial whodunit as investors, traders, and regulators seek to understand what happened and to determine whether October 15th was a unique event or a harbinger of further perilous trading conditions to come. We're all looking for a chief reason because clients want to understand the impetus behind market volatility, says Reggie Brown, head of exchange-traded fund trading at Cantor Fitzgerald. Among U.S. regulators' concerns is whether a tough regulatory climate for big banks, coupled with the inexorable rise of electronic trading, has fundamentally altered how the $12.4 trillion government bond market functions. The answer has profound consequences for the conduct of Federal Reserve policy and how the U.S. funds its national debt. One of the things I'm going to jump in here One of the things that I find interesting about this precipitous drop, again, an event that from the standpoint of statistical probability would be expected to occur once in every 1.6 billion years. The article speculates that perhaps the tougher regulatory climate for big banks has had something to do with this, because previously big banks had stepped in to sort of plug the gap with regard to the fluctuation of U.S. Treasury prices. I wonder, again, this is pure speculation, and I want to underscore that I am not an investment professional, and a lot of this is frankly relatively opaque for me, but I wonder to what extent this might serve as an argument to take the fetters off, stop regulating these big banks so that we don't have a fluctuation in T-bills. Again, pure speculation, but I found some of the tone of this article to be ominous. Again, repeating the first sentence of this last paragraph, among U.S. regulators' concerns is whether a tougher regulatory climate for big banks, parenthetically, which we need, coupled with the inexorable rise of electronic trading, has fundamentally altered how the $12.4 trillion government bond market functions. Skipping down. For the Fed, the resilience of the Treasury market will be a consideration as it begins to raise interest rates. Analysts say the risk of a highly volatile market reaction suggests the central bank will move in measured steps when it begins to raise borrowing costs, which many expect to begin next year. One worry is that the U.S. Treasury market might have suffered a pronounced loss of support for prices or liquidity, unquote, in financial parlance, due to changes that have swept over Wall Street, including the rise of computer-driven trading. Some draw parallels with the flash crash, unquote, that hit stock markets in May of 2010, which eventually spurred efforts to reform the wider equity market. James Angel, A-N-G-E-L, associate professor at Georgetown University, says the U.S. Treasury market should be regulated in a different way now that it has embraced electronic trading. Quote, when people use computers to provide prices across markets, it, liquidity, can be withdrawn in a heartbeat, he says. How much market liquidity really exists under this type of market structure and what changes should be made are the questions for regulators. Unlike other bond markets, U.S. treasuries are viewed as being open for business the entire global trading day. They also enjoy safe haven status during times of tension. The immense size of the market means investors can easily express opposing views about the direction of interest rates by buying or selling the government debt. Any indication that the market can suddenly shut down with little warning raises troubling questions about how the nature of trading has changed in recent years. Electronic systems are more visible to the whole market, so trades tend to be smaller than those that take place in private telephone conversations between dealers and investors. A recent gathering of U.S. Treasury officials and key representatives of dealers and investors, known as the Treasury Borrowing Advisory Committee, held in the Washington Hotel, revealed, quote, a wide variety of views regarding the potential drivers of the intraday volatility, unquote, on October 15th. Members of the TBAC include J.P. Morgan Chase, RBS, Morgan Stanley, BlackRock, PIMCO, Citadel, Brevan Howard, B-R-E-D-A-N, and other major players in the Treasury market. A number of U.S. regulatory agencies are looking at last month's Treasury market mayhem. An official at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York told the Financial Times, quote, in the course of our normal market monitoring, we regularly explore and assess market developments, unquote. Timothy Massad, M-A-S-S-A-D, chairman of the U.S. Commodity Futures Trading Commission, which regulates interest rate futures trading at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, said that the agency's initial view was that the market had functioned reasonably well given the high number of trades. Just let me add, that's based on our preliminary look. New evidence might come to our attention that suggests otherwise, unquote. When dawn broke on a gray October 15th in New York, traders and investors had plenty of reasons to be nervous. Concerns over the spread of Ebola and weakening economic activity in Europe and China were weighing heavily, helping to push bond yields lower as investors sought the refuge of U.S. Treasuries. The scuppering of AbbVie's £32 billion deal to acquire Shire left many big hedge funds nursing heavy equity losses and may have contributed to the rapid repositioning that would eventually engulf markets. When U.S. retail sales for September flashed across news screens at 8:30 a.m. and confirmed the first monthly decline since January, concern mounted among investors that the U.S. economy could well be softening. For investors who had positioned themselves for a strengthening economy that would propel the Fed to raise interest rates before 2017, it was a painful reversal of sentiment. Many had placed record bets on interest rates moving higher via futures contracts listed on the CME. With many hedge funds and money managers already suffering a poor year, their offside wagers on interest rates and other failing trades now required emergency action. What subsequently unfolded, according to traders, was a series of massive positions being liquidated and dumped onto the market. One hedge fund manager recalls being bewildered by subsequent events. Quote, "What on earth was charging through the market to want volume at such a price, and why?" In response to that capitalist, did the electronic marketplace just take any and all liquidity away? Unquote. By 8:45 a.m., liquidity began noticeably deteriorating and the process accelerated after 9:30 a.m., according to data from Nanex, N-A-N-E-X, a market research firm. By 9:33 a.m., the yield on the 10-year Treasury had sliced to the critical 2% level, causing many who had bet on rising yields finally to capitulate and close out their negative bets by buying back U.S. government debt and various interest rate futures contracts. In September, hedge funds had established a record net short position in interest rate futures according to CFTC weekly data. Between the end of September and the week ending October 21st, this big bet shrunk from 1.27 million contracts to just 217,000, reflecting more than $1 trillion of notional exposure being cut. Quote, "The elephant tried to squeeze through the keyhole," unquote, says John Brady, managing director at R.J. O'Brien, a futures broker in Chicago. Eric Hunsader, H-U-N-S-A-D-E-R, Nanex chief executive, says the scale of the shift in U.S. Treasury prices may have prompted the market makers, unquote, who usually support trading of the debt, to retreat. The speed of the move was abnormal, and trading systems lack historical data for such episodes that can provide them with some guidance, unquote. When the day drew to a close, nearly $1 trillion worth of cash treasuries had changed hands, illustrating the intensity of the rush for the exit. Such huge volumes also show liquidity was available, but was possibly difficult to obtain at prices deemed reasonable by investors on the day and amid rapidly fluctuating markets. The head of trading at the major dealer bank says, quote, "Once volatility shows up, you don't want to make a mistake in a fast market, and so you always see dealers pull back from providing prices." And this entire article is in the description for the record 823. So again, one wonders about just exactly what was behind that and what the future holds. Certainly a very troubling article. Let's hope that the appropriate regulators can do the appropriate and necessary regulation. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record, program number 823. Caution, Banksters at Work, Part 2, subtitled Still More Collateralized Death Obligations. This has been recorded on November 30th of 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.